approximately 18 years ago, I used to learn with a group of kids on a Shabbos afternoon. Kids in the neighborhood. And there was one child whose father had just passed away on his birthday. The kid's birthday came, and on that day he lost his father. And when the shloshim were up, we were in the middle of the summer, so I took him for a hike. That was where we had rattlesnakes. Copperheads. We went up a very high mountain, and when we got to the top, we could see across two states, meaning you could see from New York, you could see till New Jersey, you could see till Connecticut. This was such a beautiful lookout that artists from all over the tri-state area would travel up to that lookout to paint the picture you could see from there. It was called Artist's Rock. And what was amazing was that from that height, you could see the way the sun shone through the clouds. You could see, looking down at the state, or the few states, you could see how in one place it was dark from clouds. And the next place, the sun was shining. And you could see how the clouds moved. You could forecast, like in a few seconds, when there'd be light, when there'd be darkness. You could literally see it. Because from so high up, you could look down and just see as the clouds moved. There was like a bird's eye view of a tremendous amount of terrain. And you could literally see as the clouds moved, their shadow going across the state. The shadows of the clouds, and see how the sun would come to one place, and then it would be covered by the next series of clouds. So I told him, look down. You see the clouds? You see the sun? You see all of it move? When the people down there, all they see right now is they don't see the sun. And they're not sure when there'll be a break in the clouds, when they'll be able to have light. The people beyond that, all they see is that they have the sun. They see the clouds at a distance, they see the cloud at that distance, but they're not so clear when it'll become dark from the clouds again. That's life down here. Down here, we have a hard time seeing when the sun's going to shine, when the sun's going to be covered by clouds. We can't forecast things that well. But when you look from on top, then it's very easy. We could literally time it and see in a minute the sun's going to hit there, it's going to hit there. We just have to have that perspective. There are cloudy times in life. There are sunny times in life. And we don't necessarily know when it's going to switch. But if we'd only have a bird's eye view, then we'd be able to see much better. One of the things that are challenging within marriage is that we don't have a bird's eye view. We live in the moment. And one of the things we have to train ourselves is to see beyond the moment. To see for eternity. I think one of the most difficult concepts for any person in our day and age entering marriage, and all the more so someone who's entering a marriage coming from the Western world, is this concept of eternity. The concept that this is something that's beyond today and tomorrow, beyond the passing friendship, beyond the girl I dated. This is something that's just, this is for the rest of my life. This is forever. David HaMelech had a very challenging life. When he was born, so they weren't sure if he was a legitimate child. It was unclear how his mother got pregnant. And then, finally, he was given a good position, and King Saul tried to kill him. And then, after he killed Goliath, so he was promised the king's daughter, so Shaul HaMelech told him, first show me you're a brave warrior. So he risks his life and he's almost killed and he keeps on being successful. Finally he marries the king's daughter. Again King Shaul tries to kill him. And finally it reaches a point where he realizes that Shaul is trying to kill him, so he's on the run. And people are, everywhere he goes, people are talking about him. Ah, he's rebelling against his father-in-law, the king. Let's try to kill him. And they tell Shaul where he's hiding and he'd be on the run. Reached a point where he was on the mountaintop. And Shaul had gotten word that he was there. Shaul chased him and he made a mistake. He went up a mountain. And Shaul stopped the chase and he said, wait, now we got him. So instead of chasing after David, he spread out his men around the mountain. And now they started closing in on David. David's at the top of the mountain. He's got nowhere to run. And at that point, David HaMelech says, "Ani amalti bechavzi." I said in haste, "Kol adam kozev." Everyone's a liar. Where is the prophecy? Shmuel told me I'm going to be king. Where is my kingship now? It's over. Shaul's got me surrounded. Him and his men are just coming up the mountain, and it's a matter of minutes till it's finished. At which point, God sent an angel. They came and told Shaul, "You're being attacked from the Philistines on the other side. If you don't come, they're going to conquer all of the land of Israel." And Shaul had to take his men and reverse and pull back and run and go fight the war with the Philistines, and David was saved. But there was a moment where David broke. David said, "Ani amalti bechofzi," I said in haste, "Everyone's a liar. You can't have faith in anyone." So we have to remember that when we come to conclusions that are negative, "Ani amalti bechofzi," we have to recognize it's out of haste. If we'd only take our time and think, we wouldn't come to these conclusions. The most important thing, I think, in maintaining shalom bayis, maintaining peace in the home, is perspective. Seeing beyond the moment. So, any issue that comes up, if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, then you could react correctly. The problem is when a person reacts in haste. Bam! He said something. So, it's like one toothpaste tub said to the other one. I know that once something comes out, just so hard to can't really take it back. Yeah, that's the way it is. Once you say something, you can't take it back. But the trick to really controlling what we say is pausing and getting perspective, getting the perspective of eternity. David HaMelech lived his life with the Jewish people constantly questioning his authority. Initially, they thought he was rebelling against the king. Finally, Shaul HaMelech dies, so his chief general is quick to appoint one of his sons as king. And now the Jewish people are divided. The tribe of Yehuda is with him, and the rest of the Jewish people are with Shaul. And then there's civil war. There's war, literally, between David's men and Shaul's men. And finally, there's a rift between Shaul's son Ish-bosheth and Avner ben-Ner, the chief general. And Avner ben-Ner sends word to David and says, "I'm willing to join your side of the war. I'm switching sides." Now, after a lifetime of being degraded, years, almost a decade, of being chased and almost killed time after time, it's about to be over. Avner ben-Ner is switching sides. He sends a letter to David and says, "I want to join your side. I'll bring all the forces to your side and you'll be the king over the people of Israel." This is the beginning of the Davidic dynasty. This is the greatest opportunity in David HaMelech's life. We would think that David HaMelech would say, "Sure, great. Tell me when's good for you." David HaMelech doesn't say that. David HaMelech has a request. Does anyone remember what that request was? David HaMelech says, "If you want to see me, if you want to bring the Jewish people to my side of the fence, there's one thing you have to do first. When I left and I went on the run, my father-in-law Saul took my wife and gave her to someone else. There was a halachic dispute between David and Shaul whether she was legally his wife or not, and Shaul ruled that she was not his wife. David ruled she was his wife. So the Gemara discusses what was the halachic difference between Shaul and David. At the end of the day, Shaul held she was his wife. David held that she was his wife. So now David has the opportunity to unify the Jewish people, to take the crown, to take the throne, and to be the undisputed leader of the Jewish people, to stop civil war." And David HaMelech says, "No, first my wife." bring me back my wife, and then we could unify the Jewish people. Now, when you look at it at first glance, you ask yourself, what's going on here? You could stop civil war, you could stop the Jews fighting one another, and you're stopping and saying, no, first my wife. And it's not like David HaMelech didn't have other wives. He had other wives. And this wasn't the chosen wife from whom he would continue the Davidic dynasty. That was Bathsheba. That was a different wife. That wasn't even her. She wasn't going to be the one who continues the Davidic dynasty. So there are those that say that David HaMelech taught us a tremendous lesson here. Sometimes a person thinks, I have to learn Torah. So my wife is getting in my way of learning Torah. So if she tells me, don't go learn tonight, and I want to go learn, so I'm going to tell her, no, I have to learn. That's my job in this world. If I am offered by the boss a raise, if I take on one more project, so we'll have more money. She doesn't want me to take that project. She says I should be home with the kids some more. So I'm going to tell her, no, I have to do it. She doesn't like it. Well, okay, so she doesn't like it. She'll be upset at me for a little bit. Fine, she'll get over it. With the proper perspective, we have to come to the realization that the greatest investment we can make is the investment in our relationship with our spouse. There is no better investment. It's like a person saying, do I take another breath of oxygen or do I go make more money? Oh, first breathe your oxygen. When you know that you're okay, when you know you can breathe, then you know you could continue to function. The investment that one invests in his home is the most basic and best investment that a person can make. There is no better investment. If you've invested in your home, you're investing in your children, you're investing in your future, you're investing in your learning, you're investing in your life. The problem begins when we start looking at it as, that's what she wants, and this is what I want. So what? So she wants this, I want that, so she'll have to give a little. Yes, that's part of life. We all give a little. But if our decision is based on our natural thought that, no, so what if she's upset? So what if this isn't what she wants? But this is what I want. Or this is what will be good financially or for many other reasons. We have to stop and ask ourselves, is doing this move going to harm our relationship? Can I build our relationship? And we have to remember that the best investment we can make is building our home. When you've built that, you've built everything. From there, you could work outward. When I was first married, so a few months had passed, and our shadchan met me. And he asked me, how are things going? So I said, Baruch Hashem, okay. So he said, and how are you doing? So I said, the standard answer I always used to give before I was married, Baruch Hashem, trying to learn Torah. What am I doing all day? I was in yeshiva all day. So that's what I was always doing, trying to learn Torah. So he looks at me, and he says, I'm surprised to hear that. So I said, what do you mean? Well, isn't that what I'm supposed to be doing? So he said, no, you should be trying to build a home. Learning Torah is your whole life. When you build your home well, then you'll be able to learn Torah. Today, your job is to build your home. Yes, you spend a good part of your day in yeshiva and you should be learning Torah. Now, just in case you guys think this guy is a guy that doesn't appreciate learning Torah, this is a guy that stays in yeshiva till 10, 11 o'clock at night, even now that he has, I don't know how many kids. I've lost count. They have quite a lot of kids. And Baruch Hashem, this is a guy that, him and his wife, they invest tremendously in learning Torah. He is a tremendous person in Torah and in Midos and in many, many ways. And he's not one who wastes his time. He says, no, go do other things. No. But he told me, and I think he was right, the time now is to invest in the home. When you invest and you build the relationship correctly, then you have everything to learn Torah. If you take the time, instead of investing in the relationship, you say every few minutes, I got to go learn, and you're not investing and you don't build that relationship correctly, then you're not going to be able to ever learn Torah. The mistake we sometimes make is that we're short-sighted. We think, well, right now I want to do this. Right now I think I should do this. Let's think for a minute. If I forego, am I winning or losing? When Shlomo HaMelech's son became king, so the Jewish people came and said, please reduce taxes. So Rehavam, the king after Shlomo, took counsel with his advisors. The older advisors said, you just became king, let the people have what they want. Tell them, fine, we'll reduce taxes, make sure they like you, and with time, after they like you, then you'll be able to build up, you'll take the taxes, whatever makes sense to you. If you get their hearts today, then you'll be able to get whatever you want later. His young advisors told him, you show them who's boss. You tell them, I'm going to tax you the way I see fit. I'm going to do what I think. You think my father was tough? Wait till you see me. He listened to his young friends, because God, it was part of God's plan that the kingdom should not last. And he came back to the Jewish people and gave them that answer. He said, my pinky is thicker than my father's waist. You guys wait till you see what kind of leader I'm going to be. And the Jewish people said, we're not interested. Goodbye. And 10 tribes ceded. You had the breakup of the Jewish people. 10 tribes appointed their own king. They said, we have no interest in you as king. And that's it. God told them, don't go to war. I've decreed it should be such. He lost his kingdom. But the lesson the elders told him is a very important lesson. When we invest in conquering the heart, when we invest in building that relationship, we're investing in the whole future. David HaMelech says, my home has to be complete. Then I can be king of the Jewish people. Don't offer me to be king of the whole Jewish people. It's great, the whole Davidic dynasty, but I won't have a whole home. First, let me have a whole home. When I'm whole within my home, then I could branch out and be leader of the Jewish people. So long as I don't have my wife, I don't have a whole home, my home is broken, I can't stand up there and lead the Jewish people. First, let me build internally. Then I'll take the Jewish people and I'll be the leader of the whole Jewish people. And he got what he wanted. He got his wife back. And then he really was king over all of the Jewish people. But he made a very clear stipulation, a very clear condition. We have to remember that the basis for everything we are going to do is our homes. And if we're long-sighted, then with that perspective, we will remember that it's worth investing the time in our homes in order to do other things. A guy tells me, his wife tells him, I want to go out with you on a date. I want to go spend time with you. He says, well, I have to learn. So he asked me what I think. So I think that they have to find a compromise, but I also think that he's making a big mistake. His first priority has to be that she should be happy. Of course, she should also want him to learn Torah, but they have to work it out together. If she'll feel that he really wants her happiness, then she'll also really want his happiness. It goes both ways. But if she feels that his first thought is, I want my learning, so then she says, well, I want my time with you. That's what you want. That's what I want. And the best investment is the home. Now, we've discussed in our other classes how we try to work together to attain goals. But tonight, what I wanted us to focus on was the concept of building long-term. And I want to conclude with two thoughts. Firstly, mashal, an allegory that I said to someone just last week, and I think it's an important mashal. When you have a young sapling that's growing, so if it starts growing in one direction, you straighten it out. Because you know that as it continues growing, it's going to, the way it is in the beginning, is going to affect how it will be in the future greatly. And in the beginning, it's easier to change things. The same thing is true in a marriage. When you start building and invest in that building. Because when you start building and you make sure to keep it bonded together, keep it straight, so then as it continues growing, it'll flourish beautifully. If you let things go crooked, so then they keep growing crooked. The person has to invest from the beginning. We always have to invest, but the beginning has a special role. And there's one point I want to end off with. Right now, I don't have time to show the connection, but Bezrat Hashem, when we pick up on this point, I hope we'll be able to come full circle. There are two types of affection. There's external affection and there's internal affection. External affection is important. We've discussed it numerous times, and once a person is married and the couple are permitted to show affection physically, so that's very, very important. But we have to know that external affection is important when it is reflective of internal affection. what's going on in our hearts. When external affection is focused on other things, and it is not really reflective of what's going on internally, then it is close to worthless. We live in a world that keeps showing us external affection. You go on a bus and you see people sitting and doing all kinds of things on the bus, and you should know that there's almost nothing in their hearts. It's all external. We will develop this point, Dizachim, in the future, but I want to leave you with food for thought. And as you think about it, think about the connection between that and what we discussed throughout our class, and Dizachim will pick up on this point.